Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting, January 8th, 2019, 6:30 p.m. Prior to the start of the meeting, I would like to read the Open Meetings Act, a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that we use for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Form call.
Fowler.
Here.
Brownwell.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
And Cummings.
Here. Item number four, adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a modification to the agenda.
Well, we have a second to the agenda yet. Someone
second?
Second?
Yes.
I guess my question is it appropriate to add something to the agenda?
That's fine. I just have my item I'd like to bring up for Thursday's discussion.
Out of order.
It's not a board meeting, so can I do it in an ad hoc?
Are you trying to amend this agenda or amend?
I am trying to amend this agenda. I just want one item added to it.
It has to be published 24 hours.
I didn't know if that applied to that. Okay, I'll take care of that tomorrow. Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Item number five, proof of public.
Are we going to roll call?
Oh, that's right. Roll call.
Here.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Item number five, proof of publication of the meeting. I have affidavit about proof of publication of this meeting. Will be part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on 2019 affirmative action policy. Tracy Thompson and Kelly. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Lawrence.
It's your floor.
Thank you. Good evening, directors. My name is Tracy Thompson, and I am the District Secretary and HR Assistant for the NRB. Kelly Lawrence, to my left, is our legal counsel from their firm. So for your consideration tonight is the review and recommendation of the district's 2019 affirmative action policy. So this policy, the 2019 policy, has no major changes from the policy that was approved last year. So as a year-end review, this memo details the compliance actions that were taken in 2018. And I'll just do a quick review here. So to be compliant with the Affirmative Action Program, there's certain things that we need to do throughout the year. One of the first things we do is we send a memo to all our subcontractors and suppliers that, and we indicate that they need to abide by the requirements of affirmative action. Another thing we have is all of our posters are up to date in all our district offices. We send a letter semi-annually to management regarding affirmative action obligations so that all our NRD managers are aware of the policy. We continue to advertise all position openings in Nebraska Workforce, the Nebraska Vocational Rehab Office, the local newspaper, which is for us the Omaha World Herald, and for us it's out of into the, like, we would use something in Dakota City, Sioux City, Blair, that type of thing. and then we also put it on our website as well as the NERD website. And then every year we submit our best 4212, which accounts for how many employees and how many veterans we have at the NERD. So, to continue on the second page, the personnel actions that occurred during this last year, we had only three. Our education program supervisor resigned, and our natural resources educator was promoted. That was in February. And then the NRCS program assistant was hired to fulfill the natural resources educator position. So, this all happened over the matter of a few months. Our groundskeeper, every year we usually have a groundskeeper part-time hired for April to November. And then the last one was our district accountant, who was hired in May And that was a full-time job that took the place of a part-time job. So our recommendation is, staff recommends that the subcommittee recommends to the Board of Directors that the amendments to the Papua-Missouri River NRD's affirmative action policy for 2019 be adopted and incorporated into the district policy manual.
Did Kelly want to say anything?
No, I'm here for questions.
Any questions? Well, first of all, anybody from the public would like to speak.
In the first bullet point, who are the people in those positions?
Christine Jacobson was the person that resigned. Austin Hill was promoted to education, and then Kaylin Kelly, who was the program assistant for NRCS, she was hired for NRD, natural resources educator.
Okay.
Did you want any other names?
That's the last bullet point.
The last bullet point. Barb, I can never pronounce her name. She resigned as part, well, she retired basically. Right. And Kyra Peterson was.
Kyra. Thank you.
Are you through?
I'm done.
Okay. Brad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering for new employees and for their orientation, how extensive do they get any training or look at the policies for the district on this issue?
Well, all employees, they're given the, given the employee handbook, they read it completely and then they sign off on that they have read it and they will abide by it, as well as drug policy. And then it's up to the manager for whatever, because the jobs are so pretty specific. So then their manager provides that job, whatever job training might be needed. Ask, does that answer your question?
Sort of, yes. I mean, how it has to do with the, you know, the EEO here for the particular.
Well, everyone signs off that they have read the and then we had a, for the all employees meeting, we did have harassment training. And so that there's ongoing things throughout the year that we can do.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Next year in 2020, we've changed the laws in Nebraska. We're going to be assuming more Medicare responsibilities statewide. Any impact on this from the?
No.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We have a recommendation.
We need a motion.
Need a motion.
Motion and second.
Motion.
Yeah. Motion.
Yes.
Second. Did you get that, Gene? A motion and second. Who's second?
Director.
Yeah.
Director Fowler. Or Director Bradley.
I put my hand in there.
Okay. We got a motion and a second. Any questions? Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Turnbull.
Yes.
And
all right. That completes personnel legislation.
It was 2 seconds to switch.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
This is yours, Tim.
Oh, yeah, I can do that.
All right. We good to go?
I'm not sure.
All right, let's continue on. Call the order. Programs, projects, and operations subcommittee. Notifications, meetings, act has been posted. Form call.
Conley? Fowler?
Yes.
No one else?
I'm going to point.
Yeah, I'm going to point. Jim, you want to?
He can't. He's.
Oh, that's right. Who can I pick on tonight? Larry?
Sure.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Larry, Bradley will. Yeah, part of it.
Bradley?
Here.
I have proof of publication for the permanent record. Item 6, Information report from Nebraska Rural Water Association on Lakeland Connection Project Initial Financial Management Water System Assessment.
You have the adoption of the agenda.
Oh, yes, that's the good old adoption of the agenda.
Adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Have a second?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
It's usually not as confusing.
Well, last time I wasn't on committee and I was saying.
Do you second?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we have a second.
Albert?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi.
Okay, covered item 5 already. On item 6, once again, the information report from Nebraska Rural Water Association on Lakeland Connection Project Initial Financial Management Water System Assessment. Zach Nelson and Ken Haverson, Nebraska Rural Water Association.
Good evening. So since some of you might not have been on the board at the time, a couple of years ago, the Washington County Rural Water System, we extended a rural water main to serve the Lakeland Estates private water system. Project was really beneficial for the area. By constructing the 10-inch water main, we served Lakeland, which has roughly 530 homes. It provided them with clean, potable water. Their previous water source was high in iron and manganese. And also is a tremendous financial benefit to the system. It helped bring in significant revenue, which is a big reason why the water system is pretty sustainable. That project was financed with an SRF loan. The SRF loan program is ran by the Department of Health and Human Services and NDQ. As part of that process, once you're approved for the loan and the money is spent, they kind of contract out to the Nebraska Rural Water Association to follow up with people they award the money to. So Mr. Halverson with the Nebraska Rural Water Association is going to go over an assessment that was done a couple of years ago. It's just kind of a housekeeping item just to present it to the board. Turn it over to Ken.
Good evening. It's going to take me about as long to pass these out as it is going to be too long. I'm not going to take up a whole lot of your time. Reason being is, like Zach said, this is the initial assessment, which was supposed to have been presented to you probably a couple years ago. It was done by another person, Rural Water. And I'm getting around to catching up with some of these. Anyhow, Zach, did you have any questions about any of this, these numbers? And really, what we do is we come out and go through the assessment if you see if you need the loan or not. And obviously, you got the loan and it's been put in. So really, all I have to do tonight is present this to you. You don't have to take any action on it. And now what I will do is find time to meet with staff, and we will go over a follow-up assessment. It will be similar to this, another 130-some questions. And going through this, there really was no issues at all with this initial assessment. Sometimes you can have 15 or 20 issues that need to be resolved that really are none of them here. We're not going to go through this, just something for you to look over. And like I say, I will be meeting with Zach down the road to do a follow-up. And that was to see if the project did what it was supposed to do. Are there any questions for me?
Can I do? How long will it take you to do that secondary assessment? When can we expect that information to come back to us?
I can really make an appointment with him anytime to come up, sit down, and it's just a matter of filling out a similar thing.
Okay.
And then we can have you a couple 3 months. You know, when you see a lot of nose check on these, then you've got to deal with it. So we'll be talking with him down the road and we'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, thank you.
Any other directors have any questions? All right, that was an informational. Moving on to item 7, update on the West Papio levees. Amanda Grant, Lenny Rogers, Fire Engineering, come on down.
Good evening. This is another non-action item for tonight, at least, but there will be some action as we move forward in the next few months. So we wanted to give you an update. This is some work we've been doing on the West Papillion levees with the City of Papillion. And if you remember, we entered into an interlocal agreement with the City of Papillion a while back to do an investigative phase of the West Papillion levees. We know that they aren't high enough in some locations. They were built by the district in the 90s to the 2000s, and it was clear in the 2010 flood maps that the flows had increased and they did not provide the protection that they had originally been built for the 100-year flood. And so there was a lot more property in the floodway and floodplain behind those levees after the 2010 flood maps came out. And that's been a big issue in the City of Papillion. And so we have new flood maps again that we're working on. And so we've seen some decreased flows and we wanted to take another look at those levees and see just, you know, what we could do if it was, I think it was 2008, we had completed, HDR had completed a levee report and it was quite a bit of money to do the improvements then, but we wanted to take a look at with these reduced flows, what are we looking at? And so City of Papillion contracted with FIRA and we had an interlocal to pay half of that investigative phase. And so tonight Lindy's gonna go through the findings of that investigative phase and then we'll talk a little about the next steps after.
And I'll just take you through this quickly so you can have ask questions at the end or stop me in the middle if you want. So as Amanda said, the levee was built in four segments. The initial construction started in 96 and it ended in 2001. So the kind of the history behind this, as she started to say, was that originally on the 2005 maps, the levees were shown as accredited and they had a discharge of 28,500 CFS going through the system. I take that back, I'm sorry. The levees were not accredited because it wasn't a statement they made at the time, but they were considered to have a 100-year flood protection level. And then back in May 2010, a new flood insurance study came out, and the discharge raised significantly to 37,000 CFS, and it changed the maps quite a bit for the area. So this is the first map. This is the 2005 map. The area in the middle in the white is what is considered floodway. That area, the floodway is very restricted to any development. Anything that you want to do in the area has to be offset in a different area. So pretty much anything in a floodway area is limited. So you see the extents of the floodplain are in the blue. So then you go to the 2010 map, and you see that that floodway has been expanded substantially and really limited development in a lot of these areas and redevelopment in this area as well. And then you can also see that the blue areas have been expanded. There is some other areas of gray hatching in here that are kind of like a zone X that you can't see that great, but those have also been expanded as well. So basically, as Amanda mentioned, back in 2008, HDR had done a study and they came through here and said, what do we need to do to accredit these levees? And they basically said that all the levees needed to be raised on the entire system, that tributaries needed to, detention sites, and as well as the upstream dams that the NRD had already planned within the Papio Creek Watershed Plan. And then they also said that many of the bridges need to be raised in the area. So the cost for this feasibility study, they estimated that the cost would be $19.8 million to $45 million to accredit these levees. In 2009, Tetra Tech did a study and said, told the NRD that you should probably hold off until all the upstream dams are built and take a look at what that does to the hydrology in the area. And then to also look at the modeling routines that were done in the HECRAS hydraulic modeling. So that kind of takes us where we're at today. And this is kind of the phase, the steps you take to get to a levee accreditation process. So right now, as Amanda said, this was just the investigative phase. There's still several phases that would follow before these levees could be certified and then accredited by FEMA. So the tasks that we completed are listed below. We basically gathered all the information that's been compiled on this project. There's quite a bit, stuff from the Corps of Engineers, stuff that the NRD had done on the design and construction of them, and then just additional information we could find. We also grabbed information from the City of Papillion for geotechnical boring logs and stuff like that on projects that they are doing right now in the area to kind of get as much information as we could. We performed an environmental investigation analysis, which is basically a wetland delineation to go through the whole area to determine where areas of wetlands were and areas of concern to make sure we weren't creating impacts. All right, let me go back. We did a site investigation and survey. So basically myself and two other members from FIRA, we walked the entire levee. One of us was on the top, one was on the land side toe, one was on the riverside toe, and we walked the entire thing. We gathered a ton of data and have a great geo database now for you guys to use that shows where every sign is, every culvert. We have pictures of everything. We also did a culvert penetration video review where we reviewed all of the videos that the NRD has been taking of the culverts that go through the levee. And then we did updated hydrology and hydraulics, and we also did a full geotechnical investigation and analysis on this one, which included field borings as well. So this is just the extents of it. So the right bank system ends at the tieback. Oh, what did I just do there? Okay, the right bank system ends at the tieback right there at Lincoln Road, and then goes along that tieback and follows the creek all the way down to 42nd, and then it ties back in the Bellevue Sports Complex area, so just right at 42nd Street. The left bank upstream section right now currently ties off in the south wall of the fire station for the City of Papillion. And then it goes all the way down and kind of ends at the Knoyer property down here and ties back to high ground in that old railroad embankment. So part of this study, one of the things that's been known in the City of Papillion is that there's been several bridges that have caused constrictions on the system. The first one being the 84th Street Bridge and the second one being the 66th Street Bridge. The 84th Street Bridge is a little bit different. You don't have a lot of room to expand the bridge because there's a lot of people who have businesses, Mr. Sapinski, in that area. So you're really limited to what you can do with the bridge cross section. So we worked with Olson & Associates and had them look at the 84th Street Bridge to see if they could eliminate this weir and how much they could take out and still make sure that the bridge was structurally sound. The conclusions of that were is that basically none of it can come out and keep the bridge still structurally sound. So we kind of abandoned that option, knowing that if anything wanted to be done at 84th Street, it would have to be a full removal and replacement. On 66th Street, we had Olson & Associates look at an idealized cross-section that would carry all the flow through the system in that area. So we gave them the parameters for that and asked them for a cost estimate what that would be. And they came back with about a $2.5 million current value cost of what it would cost to construct this idealized bridge at 66th Street. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. So we ended up updating our hydraulic models, and we used hydrology that we had already updated for the NRD, and that includes all of the upstream dams being fully built out. So we took into account all of those dams, which really decreased the hydrology through the area. And then when we updated hydraulics, we updated some of the models, made some adjustments to what we felt like the levees were really, how they were functioning. And we ended up coming out with two scenarios. So this first scenario shows you if you replace the 66th Street Bridge in full, the only place on the entire system that you have to raise the levees is upstream of 84th Street. So hydraulics really played a great role. Hydraulics and hydrology really played a huge role in this project at this point. So then without the 66th Street Bridge modification, you can see you get some backups right there before the bridge in that area, and then also upstream of 84th Street. And the reason you don't see anything in through this area is because this is the area that the NRD came back in and built on top of an area that Sarpy County had done, and we did re-verify that, and these levees are actually a little bit higher in through this area, so there's literally like a tenth of a difference from where it needs to be. So it's right there where it needs to be. So it was good that the extra was built on at the time that it was. So basically what we came up with is that there's levee raises to approximately 1.8 miles of this 9-mile system. And most of the areas that the levee is going to be raised, there will be trail removal and replacements. So as you saw in the pictures before, the primary raises are upstream of 84th Street and 66th Street. We also found that flood walls around 84th Street will also have to be raised. The existing flood walls that are there will be able to be raised on top of structurally. But then around this fire station area in downtown Papillion, there's going to have to be some new flood walls to get around that fire station. That fire station sits really close to the existing embankment, and there's no way that a levee cross-section would fit in there. So if you looked at this, this would be the levee cross-section, and then the areas that you see that are thin lines would be flood wall areas. So there will be some extensive new flood walls on that area. We also looked at all three of the culverts, and we came up with an assessment of what we would need to do. There is some modifications to the culverts that we're recommending be done. And you can see we went through and we inventoried how we thought the best way to fix these was. So you can see some of them would be culvert extensions. Some would be centrifugally cast concrete pipes. Some could be slip lined. So it's a various methods that we use for each different penetration. Another issue that we became aware of when doing the site investigation looking at it is that a lot of the slope within the creek or the channel bench, there's some areas of sloughing. It's not significant, but if you see right here, there are some areas that get pretty close to the edge of the creek, and those areas are where the levee prism would go down. So that kind of becomes a problem with the levee's integrity in those locations. So we will be recommending repairing those areas as well. As I mentioned before, the tieback on the left bank goes into the wall of the fire station. FEMA doesn't think that that's a great solution anymore. So the tieback right now that we're recommending goes north of there and ties back in this old alleyway, which is actually high ground, and then carry high ground all the way up Adams Street in that area. And as I mentioned before, the 66th Street Bridge that we looked at, as you saw, we didn't find great differences for the cost. The benefits to not doing the bridge, or the benefits to constructing the bridge, didn't outweigh the cost of not constructing the bridge. We're still kind of investigating some other options in that area to see what we can do. But right now, we're kind of looking at also possibly doing raises on 66th Street where the current levee ties back. So right now, if you look at 66th Street profile, this is the bridge down here, the bridge top, and this is where actually the levees are on this on the structure. So they come back around. They call them, Martin calls them shoe fly levees. And so because the levee does have to be raised in this area, we will have to do some modifications to 66th Street where it crosses, where the levee crosses it. And so we in geotech, we found very little problems. We didn't find any problems at all. So geotechnically, this levee was great. There's not going to be any seepage berms required. There is one area that we might want to discuss looking at relief wells, but it's very small. So here's the overall outcome of what this study would do, or what would happen if this project was constructed. So it would remove 308 properties within Papillion's extraterritorial jurisdiction from the floodplain or floodway. So that's 82 commercial properties at 23,162 residential properties, 15 farm properties, and so the total comes out to be $93.7 million and 900 acres in property and infrastructure that will be removed. So the estimated yearly savings in flood assurance alone is $1.01 million. There's additional benefits that come along other than just the number itself. So obviously, you get faster selling times if your property's not in the floodplain. It's easier to obtain mortgages. You have the additional risk that people are not like willing to take always because of flood-prone areas and the unknowns about the flood insurance program right now. You always get increased development, redevelopment, property value increases. You come with tax base increases and the social perceptions related to just being in the floodplain. So we came out with an estimated construction cost of this entire project at $9.3 million. And we do have breakdowns of that if you're interested in seeing any of that. So that's where we're at right now, and that's where the studies. We're finalizing a couple of things for the NRD in the city of Papillion right now, and we'll be putting the final study out probably in a couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you, Lindy. Anybody have any questions?
I had one. You were talking about the amount of water flow going early on in the report. It changed from one year to a different year.
Yes, so in 2005, there was 28,000 CFS of was the hydrology number that they're using for these levees.
Right.
And then it increased to 37,000 CFS.
How does it do that?
Well, developed areas, most of it's because of air development within the area.
Within the immediate area, or how?
Within the whole basin.
In the West Papio Basin. So the reason that the flood maps were updated in 2010 was because FEMA had noticed, I mean, it was the fastest growing area in the state.
Mm-hmm.
It was really that West Papio Basin. It's Elkhorn, it's Harvey sure. County. And so when we redid that flood study in 2010, the numbers were way up. But you have to remember that 28,000, that study was done quite a while ago. That might have been done in the 80s. It just, that study was done much earlier. It just, the date of the map, 2000.
Okay.
So there's probably a
It just seemed like an incredible increase in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, you're probably looking more like a 90 to a 2010.
Yeah, so the development in that length of time is where you see.
Okay, thank you.
Director Weiss?
Yeah, I remember back, this is when I was first elected on the board, we had a discussion about this, about the properties of what we had did upstream. And they were actually being able to build more businesses along there. Now you're saying we're taking them back away?
No.
Because you just said we're going to alleviate 82 commercial businesses and...
I'm sorry, I guess I didn't understand your question. Can you say that again?
You were talking about we were going to alleviate 82 commercial properties and all this farm ground, so we're actually going to take it away?
Taking it out of the floodplain.
And floodplain.
Okay, so this will actually take them out of the floodplain.
Yes,
correct.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought you were going to just move them.
No.
Okay,
no.
Okay. That was my... Well,
and just for reference, I remember 12 years ago starting when we had this study from HDR, and it was after we built all the reservoirs, we still had over a $20 to $40 million project to bring these back into certification. And so that's a monument. That's a third... really, of what it was going to cost, what we thought it was going to cost after building all the reservoirs and bringing these back in. So this is a game changer for Papillion. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, if they had a fire in downtown Papillion, they couldn't rebuild half of it, depending
right.
on the amount of damage. So, I mean, that's, you know, you can see the attention that Papillion got when all of a sudden you're talking over 20 to 40 million. Now you're only talking, 9 million is still significant,
mm-hmm.
but it's a huge decrease from what they thought it was, or what we thought it was going to be 10 years ago or
right.
longer. So, I mean, just for reference, it's huge. Anyone else?
Okay. Are you still building to a 100-year event? Is that the criteria?
Yes. And then there's three feet of freeboard.
So what do they call that accreditation? You said it was accredited or wasn't an accreditation before, now
so
it is.
At the time, they weren't using
yeah.
that term, but now it's an accreditation by FEMA.
But what is that?
It's just an accredited levee means that
it can show protecting from the 100-year flood on the flood map, and that means areas behind the levee are not in the flood.
Right, but what do they call it? There is a code for that, right? It's we're meeting a criteria for what is zone X or zone D, that type of stuff. Is that what we're dealing with?
There is a whole process with to set zones behind levees, but
right.
when you accredit,
Zone X,
which is
non-regulated. So zone X is
non.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
The 9.3, does that includes the levee improvements further up on 84th?
Yes, it includes.
And does that include the bridge replacement at 66?
So that one does not include the bridge replacement at 66. The bridge, if we did add the bridge replacement, it'd be 10.3 to that number.
But the bridge can stay as it is if we do the other. At priority basis, we do the levee improvements on 84th, west of 84th. And
yes. And there's culvert. That includes the culvert modifications that I discussed.
In theory, of course, we, you know, the bridge is too low, like you said, but you know, the event of disastrous flood, it's relatively temporary for that bridge to be out of service, assuming it gets flooded to the 100-year level. 1% level, and I guess what I'm getting at is how low a priority can we make that bridge replacement without getting into trouble?
That's kind of what we're looking at. There are some life safety issues, not life safety, but some safety issues. That is a very, very highly traveled area through there. So the city does have some desires to try to look at that bridge replacement. So that's kind of what we're doing at this next level.
If we put that in perspective with 36th Street and further in Bellevue, which right now gets flooded and gets closed.
Yes.
I guess I'm kind of hoping for a lesser priority for that expense. It's only a million, but
yeah.
It's still significant.
Yeah, we all thought it would need to be raised as well, but when we actually get down to looking at the numbers and the cost to replace the bridge is just so much more than the work we can do to, build up the levees around.
Right. Thanks.
My only question with the bridge is it in pretty good shape right now? I mean, what's the life expectancy of the bridge if we don't fix it and we do all this other work anyway?
It's fairly good.
Okay, so it's going to be there another 20, 30 years. Okay. My question was, if there were any questions on the bridge anyway, if we're going to do all this work, maybe we can get a better deal if we do the bridge at the same time. But if the bridge is fine, then...
That wouldn't be us. That would be in the highway department.
Yes.
On average, how much are you going to raise? 1 foot, 2 foot?
It goes from about a half a foot to 3 foot up when you get further upstream. So,
as you go.
Mm-hmm. And then just the next steps of all of this, so you can, if you have any questions on that. So we're wrapping up, as Lindy said, wrapping up the investigative phase. And the staff at the City of Papillion and the staff here at the NRD have had a lot of discussions as we move forward. And so they are working on a contract with FIRA for the final design that would get through construction documents for this project. And then they would ask us to do an interlocal agreement as we had before with a 50-50 cost share. And then we won't probably address construction in that interlocal, but certainly, they would like our support. Their staff has a council, we have a board, and we can't commit to any of that down the road, but, as the owners of the levees, we want it to be the best it can be, and you saw the property that the City of Papillion has in the floodplain and the floodway and what that benefit to them is through taxes and economic development. So they certainly have a big stake in this, so we really want to proceed at the 50-50 partnership, and it's been working well so far. So that's our intent as we move forward. Probably next month, could be the following, we'll have an interlocal with the City of Papillion for you to consider for the final design. Then we'll probably just kind of take it in steps once we have that final construction cost estimate, see what we all need to do financially with, is that and what the construction schedule looks like. Is that 2 fiscal year? Is that 3 fiscal year? And kind of get our head around that a little better. But we will be back with more on this in the near future.
Great. Any other final questions? Hearing none. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thanks, Amanda.
Moving on to item 9, review and recommendation on Platte River Bridge.
7.
8. Golly, that's twice tonight. I'm slipping. It's been a long day.
We got 10.
All right. Review and recommendation on amendment number 3 to professional service contract with Benish for Glacier Creek Stream and Wetland Mitigation Bank Project. Amanda, again, thank you.
Maybe you can go to the map. I think we're all going to need a quick refresher because we bought this land in 2009 and worked with UNO to purchase this land. It's adjacent to Allwine Prairie. And you've heard us over the years, we've bought more land to expand the prairie. And it was Allwine, now we call it Glacier Creek Preserve. But this was the first parcel that started the expansion. And we purchased this in 2009 with the intent of the district building a wetland and stream mitigation bank on that property. And we can then sell credits. We can use credits ourselves if we have a 404 permit that requires mitigation. Or we can sell it to any other entity who needs credits for mitigation. So this was a great project. We started with a design in 2010, so it's been 8 years ago. With it wasn't even called Benish, and I want to say HWS, but I could be wrong. But they've since been bought out. So we had an initial contract to do the design, and part of that design is they have to get a bank established with the Corps of Engineers, and so that's this whole other process. And then you have the design construction documents. So you get approval from the court, have the bank, then you have the construction documents, then you build it, you monitor, and you have the credits to sell. And that's how that worked. We got through the majority of the process with the Corps of Engineers, and we did the construction documents. And then the funding for this project really was kind of put aside for other priorities at the district here. So we have been on hold for quite a while. And one of the reasons is this project is quite expensive to construct. It's a great project because what we've really done is we've taken this Glacier Creek and we've meandered it and made it really more like a native prairie stream. And it's very shallow. It can flood and, you know, out of the banks frequently and have a lot of connection with the floodplain. And so we love that design. But when it ties into the big patio, there's a lot of degradation from the big patio, from the main systems, and just in our whole watershed in general, we have a lot of stream degradation. So if you want a shallow, nice, shallow prairie stream, you have to get down to the water level at the patio. And so there's a pretty big concrete structure, which is not prairie-like, but the best we could do to get that water back into the big patio creek. And so we also have this north stream. I don't think we have named this one, just we call it the north stream. We create some meanders up here. And when we create those shallow streams that overtop and we create longer stream lengths, we earn credit that count towards streams in other places where we would fill in for a dam embankment or for levee work or anything like that. And then we also have these areas of wetlands all around the streams and then some other pockets of wetlands. And so then the wetland mitigation is mitigation as well. So that's our plan. And we kind of put things on hold in 2012. We had a contract that was it was not to exceed $176,544 at that time. There was some construction administration in there, but now we have the budget has funded the construction of this project. We're super excited to get started on it, but it's been over 5 years, so we have to redo the wetland delineation. We have to redo the stream assessment to get that baseline of credits. And we have to just update the text. A lot's happened just in general that we need to update in there. We also added a couple things. So the Benesch Agreement Amendment 3 is attached, but the highlights are really most of it is updating. And it's also updating with new staff and new hourly wages for folks. It's just been a while since we had the initial contract. The things we added are a pedestrian bridge right here. So this is, there's a farmstead down here, and there's a road that comes up to their farm and goes through here. And this is really the main access to the UNO, the folks. We've helped purchase this land up here as well, so All Wine encompasses all of this now. And this is their main access up to the north. So we had planned for a low water crossing here where you could still drive over it, but the creek would always be running over it. Well, in the time that this design is kind of, we've been on hold, this All Wine has really become a really nice place for the public to go walk, and they have a lot of events, and they have a lot of school kids, just college kids. They do all kinds of research and have classes out there. So driving's probably not good enough anymore, so we're going to do a pedestrian bridge, just a small one over that creek so that the people that are walking wouldn't have to walk through water. We added a little more construction observation and some on-site consultation while they enhance some wetlands. But then the other thing is updating the construction plans and bid documents to our standards. We've kind of changed some things over the years. So the amendment is $84,855, and that brings their total not to exceed the $261,399. And that should get us through construction. We hope to, we can't do the new wetland delineation until the weather gets better and the plants come back, but as soon as we can do that, we'll be out there, and we'd like to bid it this summer and get someone started. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
That's the most difficult.
Get a second. I have a second. Any questions?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember that night, I think back in 2010, And Dr. Bragg, my ecology professor, is sitting there. How's Dr. Bragg, or is he still around? Or
he's awesome. And he and, I mean, they are complete partners on this. We do the plans together. They'll be right there during construction. We will always have the credits and manage the credits, but they really will be the ones on site, UNO, to manage that thing. I mean, they have an on-site person who lives out there. So they've been a partner the whole time. We still work together all the time, and he's doing great.
Good, good. And my second question, down in the left-hand corner, I see some development. Was that there in 2010, these houses and so forth?
Is that
encroaching upon Alwine Preserve? I have it in my copy.
This is all here, and then there's the Heritage up north that has houses now, but that's where we've been trying to buy the land from that developer to help protect the area around the prairie.
Amanda, is there an estimate on the credit, number of credits that we'd get from this, roughly? I know it's kind of fast.
You know, I don't know. I don't remember all that off the top of my head. So when we sell credits, though, the way we look at what we've spent on the project and try to balance that out with what we want to sell them for, we have only ever had wetland bank where we sell acre by acre. This is going to be a new thing for us because it's units, functional units of stream mitigation. So we'll have to think that through a little bit more. And I don't know that we have a price for a functional unit.
But the idea is to get your money back from what
it is. And our last wetland bank where we had sold all the credits that we were able to establish was 2008 was the last time we sold any, or 2007-8, and that was 52,000 an acre. I expect this will probably be a little higher.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Right. We have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Bradley? Bradley?
Yes.
Yes. And now, item 9, consider recommendation on Flat River Bridge Trail Project Program Agreement with NDOT, Eric Williams.
Good evening, directors. Do you have the map, Bill? Version, do you have, oh, you have all of the pages? Okay. So this is the bridge over the Platte River on what's generally called Highway 75, but what NDOT likes to call Highway 34. Because the lower number is the convention for them. So between Bellevue and Plattsmouth. And the road surface has been improved, and the road is being upgraded. And along with that, the trail on the east side of the northbound lanes has been in process for a while. In 2000, the piers were widened. Last February, NDOT installed the girders between the piers. And now phase two of the project will be to come by and put the trail, the trail deck on top of the girders and connect down to Allied Road at the north and Beach Road at the south. And so this is the first step in a federal aid project, and so we need to sign the program agreement with Nebraska Department of Transportation that highlights the responsibilities of the next few years as we go through the design process and get to construction, which is currently planned for 2022. So the print versions of the attachments should be relatively short. The digital versions, which I think you should have received, were quite a bit longer. In the print version, the next page is the breakdown of the financial summary from the program agreement from NDOT. And so you can see the preliminary engineering phase, right-of-way utilities, construction, and construction engineering. The estimate on the project is $2 million. This is 80% federally funded and 20% locally funded, so the local match total is $400,000 down there at the bottom. And this is from the agreement between the NRD and Nebraska Department of Transportation. And then the last page on the print version is from a different document. This is the interlocal we completed in October of 2017, this stipulates the local funding match of that $400,000. We have other partners who are going to help cost share with us. So the NRD is funding 50%. Bill, I don't know what page this is. I'm sorry, I can't even look for the difference there. But the NRD would fund $200,000, and then the other, the two cities, the two counties, and the other NRD would fund the remaining portion of the local part of the project. We think this is a conservative estimate. We think it should come in under this cost, but this should give us enough room to get the design and construction accomplished and be on timeline for the 2022 federal fiscal year when this federal funding would be available for construction. So, again, this is the agreement that covers from here all the way through the end of the project with Nebraska Department of Transportation for that federal funding.
That's who's dead, right?
Right. Motion and second. Any questions from Director?
I had one little question. Notice that Papio's paying $200,000 and the Lower Platte South is paying $40,000. Is that just what we negotiated? We've got more money? That's just the way it came out.
Yeah, it was just part of the negotiation.
Yep, and that 50% cost share is what we would do on most of our Trails Assistance Program cost shares also. And so through this discussion, we were the lead partner in this project, and we are the administering agency. So, we ended up with a larger share there.
Is the trail completed beyond the bridge on this on the Cass County side?
If you look at the map again and zoom out a little bit, Bill, there are some... this project, for purposes of discussion with the Nebraska Department of Transportation, is bounded by the public access from Allied Road on the north side and Beach Road on the south side. It does not evaluate any additional connections. However, regional trail plans do include, if you look at Allied Road and you continue directly to the east, that is the levee top that we've been working on for a few years. And on the south, Beach Road wraps around through a recreation area where there's some hunting of some kind.
So once you pedal your bike across the river here, there's some place to go?
Yes. Beach Road is a currently a gravel road, and you can ride from there down to Plainsmith. Okay. And on the north side, Allied Road, you have to find your way kind of along some sorts of roads now to get back up to Bellevue. But the long-term plan is that the levee construction wrapping around from the Papio down along the Missouri and back up the Platte would be the connection there.
We wouldn't anticipate this being widely used initially.
Initially, there are people who have used Highway 75 to get between the two counties,
sure,
because the next connection is 20 miles up the
road. A little danger.
And so as the road is being upgraded, you're no longer legally allowed to ride on the expressway. And so NDOT was a strong partner because they were required to provide an alternate pass.
Sense.
It probably will be used by people who are trying to get recreationally between the two counties.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may... it being used in the danger, I remember my cousin and I parking down there by Beach Road in the dark, stashing the car, pulling our fishing poles out of the trunk and walking in the direction of the oncoming traffic, then slipping over down that bank and coming along that lake there and being very quiet and catching bass and then walking back. Yeah, and I guess, you know, of course, we're on record, it's too late. But just one of those things that when I was a Huckleberry Finn, maybe once a Huckleberry Finn, always. But it's used. It's used. And even if you're not seeing it at the time, and I think it will increase traffic and be a very well project. And sad note, that cousin of mine passed away last June, and my fishing buddy.
So the design of this location will have a fence between the highway, and there will be a physical separation between the edge of the highway, about a 3-foot gap, about an 8-foot tall fence, the trail, and then a low railing like we have in the lead bridge, so you're more connected to the river as you look downstream. So it will be safe for all users on both the road and on the trail, but then still connecting to the natural resources.
Any other questions? Hearing none, roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Yes. And that concludes this subcommittee.
Up next. Rich does, but
here. Give him the gavel of
Antioch. I don't know if I need the gavel. I want to call together the Finance, Expenditure, and Legal Subcommittee meeting January 2019. I've already read the Notification of Open Meetings Act. Again, roll call.
Here.
Conley?
Here.
Here.
Item number 4, adoption of agenda. Motion and second.
So moved.
of the second for the adoption.
I'll second.
Okay. Item number five.
Roll call.
Aye.
Me.
Here.
Yes.
Item number five, proof of publication of the meeting. Have proof of publication become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on land rights for West Pavilion Regional Basin number 7, WP7 account 0201557-4430 for 110% mandate grant.
Already at over 110%. All right, this is on the WP7 land rights. So what happened was this little piece here is less than an acre. The board had approved this purchase on this side of the road in FY18, and we intended to close on that in FY18. And it kind of got lost in the shuffle at the family's attorneys and then consequently here, too. We still thought we could close in FY18, and then they had a change with their family trust name, and the documents that had to be redone and things. So that's the delay. We ended up closing in FY19, and in FY19 we had just planned for these pieces right up here. That was the last of the pieces, but we closed on this and Tract 3. So this Tract 3 was around $40,000, and it got pushed into FY19. So that made the budget category go over 110. It's 124% now, and there's no more land to buy in this category, so we just said that we'd be allowed to exceed the budgeted amount up to $200,000. We're at $199,294, but there's nothing else there to spend. And then just as a side note, this is the Water Sustainability Fund applies to this project. And so 60% of these land purchases can be reimbursed. And we're getting a big reimbursement package altogether to send in the next day or so. And so we will, 60% of the funds to build, to buy those, will come back to the district and we'll update those numbers.
Thank you. We can have a recommendation.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors? Roll call.
Brett? Yes.
Me?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Item number 7, review and recommendation on land acquisition from Missouri River R613/R616 levy improvement project. Do we need an executive session?
Yes, please.
Okay. Do we have a motion for an executive session for discuss land or purchase of land rights?
So moved.
A motion?
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Andrew?
Hi. It paints a vivid picture in your mind.
Larry, did you keep those masks or did you throw them back?
Oh, we kept them.
Okay.
I'm sure there wasn't any Call of Stern in there. No. Only we didn't fish the right, river.
Cut. We need a motion to come out of the executive session.
Second.
We got a second.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Please?
Yes.
Andrew?
All right. I want to read Peter Ciasso Living Trust, R-613, tracks 2930. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a permanent easement purchase agreement with Peter Ciasso Living Trust dated June 1, 2007 in the amount of $20,000, for an area containing 1,772 acres of land, 4.7. Acres of land for the Missouri River R613/R616 levy improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approve as to form, and that's a record.
Need a second.
Second. any comments?
No.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Item number two, PCS nitrogen fertilizer R-613, track 6 and 7. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with PCS Nitrogen Fertilizer Limited Partnership, a Delaware limited partnership, in the amount of $186,623 for an area containing 37.532 acres of land for the Missouri River R613/R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel as to form it. Any discussion? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Item number three, Arcadian Fertilizer LP, now owned by PCS Nitrogen, R-613, track 8. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Arcadian Fertilizer LP, Delaware Limited Partnership, now owned by PCS Nitrogen Fertilizer Limited Partnership, a Delaware Limited Partnership, in the amount of $115,877 for an area containing 23.716 acres of land for the Missouri River R613/R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approve as the former director. Need a second?
Yes.
And a second? Any discussion? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. I think that concludes.